nationwide. We bring you latest current issues, discussions and information. Nationwide on Radio Miraya.
Hello. Hello, welcome to Nationwide program on Radio Mirai with me, Gabriel Shadar. And today this is the start of our discussion hour, of course, as usual. And the most important thing we have been discussing about in the whole of the last 10 days and week is the marking of the 75th anniversary of the United Nations, that is the which falls, of course, on 24th of October. But in the run-up to those that time, of course, there are a lot of discussions that have been taking place, even at the HQ of the United Nations in New York, and even here at Radio Mirai. The United Nations have been here for a long time in South Sudan, and of course since the country was part of Sudan, and after the country also separated from Sudan, the United Nations continue, if not increased, its presence here in the country. To have the discussions going on, and we are looking at the prospects of peace building and also peacekeeping, and what is the meaning of the theme of the United Nations for this year, is the future we want, the United Nations we need, building durable peace together. So this has been building peace, durable peace together in South Sudan. That is a localized theme here. So we will have the head of the United Nations mission in South Sudan, that is David Shearer, who is online with us on phone. Welcome, SRSG, on Nationwide.
Thank you very much. Very nice to be with you. Thanks for the invitation.
Yes, and also for you to familiarize with the guests who are with me in the studio, I will give them the chance to introduce themselves. Let me start with the representative of the South Sudan Peace Commission.
Thank you very much, Worldwide. I'm Betty Oboy Itrong. I'm a commissioner at the South Sudan Peace and Reconciliation Commission.
Yes, yes, welcome. Now you've known the voice of Honorable Betty. Now also with me in the studio is representative of the Youth National Union, Deputy Chair.
Thank you for having me. My name is Fernanda Paul. I'm the Deputy Chair of South Sudan National Youth Union.
Welcome. Welcome, Fernanda. And also we have the South Sudan Peace Building Director General for Peace Resolution and Social Cohesion.
Thank you very much. I am very pleased to be in this program. I am the Acting Director General for Peace Resolution and Social Cohesion, Honorable Beatrice.
Welcome, Honorable Beatrice. Welcome, Honorable Betty, and also welcome, Ms. Fernanda, and welcome, SRSG. The first question under this theme, the future we want, and the UN we need, building durable peace together in South Sudan. As a partner for peace with the people of South Sudan, what would you like to say are important elements in building durable peace? This question, like, this is an opening remark for the SRSG, David Shearer.
Oh, well, thanks again. Great to be with you on such an august panel of people. Maybe just a couple of words just on UN 75. I mean, the UN is 75 years old. It was formed out of the ashes of World War II, and it's gone through, obviously, lots of different changes in that time, from the UN agencies that we have here in South Sudan, and everybody knows who they are, UNDP, the World Food Programme, UNICEF, WHO, UNHCR, etc. We all know who they are. But also, they've got to become involved in the peacekeeping operations as well, and there's UNMISS here in South Sudan, as there are many other peacekeeping missions and political missions right across the world. And 75, the 75 years, what they decided to do was to conduct one of the biggest listening exercises ever done, and that was to get people to talking about the UN, what they thought the UN had done, and what they felt that the UN in general was going to do in the future, and was it important. And overwhelmingly, people said that yes, they felt that the UN was very important, had done a very useful job and had an essential role to play in the future going forward. And this listening, these engagements, these one-minute interviews, there was a million people have taken place in, taken part in this, and so we've got a very, very big a number of people who have been contributing to, you know, where the UN has come from and where the UN should be going in the future. But coming to South Sudan, I mean, we've been the UN, as you quite rightly said, has been involved in southern Sudan and then South Sudan for decades. We have a peacekeeping mission here, in addition to the agencies as well. Mm-hmm. And what we're trying to do is to do two things: building that durable peace, and that's working with those people who are involved in peace, from the grassroots right through to the national level and even the regional level of the countries around the region. And the other thing is protecting civilians, making sure that in amongst the fighting that the civilians are given protection, and ensuring that they are able to be safe and they're able to get on with their lives and live peacefully and prosperously. So those are the two things that we try and do in with our peacekeeping mission. But it's a big presence here, and we are partners. We're not in any way. We respect South Sudan's sovereignty. We want to work alongside people. We provide support and services that would not be available otherwise. And eventually what we would like to do in the future is to see our peacekeeping operation dwindle and become smaller and the agencies become larger as peace comes to South Sudan, and we're able to move from from peace building into development type of activities. So I think I've said enough.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, let me be quiet and listen to the others now.
Yeah, we have been listening, because this is part of the listening exercise that is being done here, as people are celebrating or marking the 75th anniversary of the United Nations amid COVID-19. For my guests in the studio, the theme is clear: is that we are looking for durable peace. And then people are speaking about a lot of actions that have been taken or must be taken. But you are representing here your own respective institutions. In your views, what are those necessary steps for durable peace? We're not talking here about power sharing, all that kind of things. We are looking for a long-term question. Let me start with the youngest, Ms. Fernanda Machoy.
Okay, thank you so much. But I think I will speak on behalf of the youth and what I think it's really what the youth need. And I think effective youth participation is really something that is very important in making sure that they are included in the decision making. Is one of the things that can really help. As we know, South Sudan make 70% of the population, and the effective youth participation in decision making and also sustainable peace building, it's something that can really help to strengthen durable peace. And also looking at that part of where the youth in South Sudan have been involved in different kind of violence, and they make the biggest number that cause this violence come from the grassroots, talk of the cattle camps and other places. So I really think the youth can be a focal point to take messages to the grassroots and speak to their own fellow youth for them to understand each other well, so that there can be a durable peace.
Mm. And it needs a lot of efforts and
yes.
input
yes.
From those who are responsible for supporting youth.
Yes, yeah. Indeed.
Yes. Let me go to the South Sudan Peace Building Director, Deputy Director General Acting Director General, right? Honorable Beatrice. Welcome.
Thank you very much. I am called Beatrice. You know, to have a durable peace in South Sudan, it is a very huge responsibility. This involves, it calls for a collective responsibility. All parties, including youth, the women, political parties, the business community, the farmers, the disabled, and the rest. Everybody has to be included in the table of peace. Everybody must be involved in peace process, because women, youth, these are the people who are mostly affected, and they are the people who suffers the impact of conflict in the country. So I think by involving all the sectorial communities in a peace process, this will promote a very lasting peace in the country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's a question of involvement for all the stakeholders, those
all
who are implementing and those who are affected by these measures. Let's go also to the South Sudan Peace Commission, Honorable Betty.
Thank you very much. In order to have sustainable peace in South Sudan, each and every member of the South Sudan society have to take responsibility for their own actions, because these actions are the ones that are causing a lot of conflicts in the country. Two, we must ask ourselves soul-searching questions. Am I a peace builder or am I a destroyer? Another thing to sustain this peace is that citizens must have a critical thinking, because no one from anywhere can come and tell you to take up arms because of his or her personal interest and then you just join. So we really have to think very critically and ask ourselves, why am I taking the arms?
Yeah.
What is the role of the arms in this scenario? If I have a personal issue with you, let's sort it out. We should not mobilize others to take up arms to destroy the very existence of this nation. So it's a collective responsibility from us citizens, leaders, and everybody in the country to look into it, that we nurture this peace and keep it close to our hearts, because it's our very survival. Otherwise, sustainable peace may not be achievable.
Mm-hmm.
If we look at it as if it's somebody's responsibility, you have to look at yourself that I am responsible, he is responsible, she is responsible, and everybody is responsible to bring about sustainable peace in this country. Two, we would also look at equitable distribution of resources, so that we don't go around beating ourselves because he has and I don't have, the other one has taken what and which one has taken this. So resources have to be distributed equitably for the citizens of this country, so that we don't have the feeling of having been left out.
Yeah.
You feel you are included. You are part and parcel of this society.
Yeah.
So you have the right to the access of all of this. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Honorable Betty, from the South Sudan Peace Commission. Also, you have heard the SRSG, David Scherer, the comments from the guests who are here with me in the studio. And this leads me to the immediate question about the culture of multilateralism, because all of them agree that we want many people to get involved. And of course here, as you said in earlier, that the international community is here as a partner. So what role can it play here when we bring in the element and the culture of building a culture of multilateralism?
I think it's a big word. And to be honest with you, I don't know if it really in some ways reflects what it's all about. I mean, it is about working alongside local institutions.
Mm.
It's about working alongside people who, you know, and sustaining the peace that's ongoing. And I just want to echo what the participants were just saying in the last question. I mean, that It has to be about involvement and participation. That's absolutely essential. You can't have peace without involvement and without participation, and that participation sometimes is going to be critical as well as being supportive. And that critical thinking and that critical voice has to be tolerated and it has to be accepted. I think it was something that Betty raised, that you know the differences have to be settled by parties through a political process, not by guns. There's a tendency now, if you don't get things your own way, you pick up a gun and go and take it. And I mean, that's become now unfortunately a pattern rather than an absolute exception. And I also really think what I think Betty was saying about the sharing of resources. So much of the conflict in South Sudan is about resources. The fact that some people have them and some people don't have them and don't have access to them. And, you know, there are some people who are mega rich and other people who are terribly poor and are facing hunger. These resources have to be shared equitably through the state, and so the state has to be responsive to the people. And then lastly, and I think this is one thing that I really do agree, and Betty mentioned responsibility, I think just to say South Sudan gained its sovereignty, but with sovereignty comes responsibility. With the leadership that gains the sovereignty has a responsibility to make sure that all of those things happen for its people. Now, coming back to multilateralism, mm-hmm. we can help work alongside all of those functions. But it's the UN and all its different guises that can do that. But it's not necessarily, you know, multilateralism is a big word for basically working together and using our added values to work alongside those who are going to make it work long term for the people of South Sudan, which is the South Sudanese.
Mm-hmm. That brings me to a question. This is a follow up question, and I'm posing it to the guests in the studio, to the three of them, Honourable Betty and Honourable Beatrice and Ms. Fernanda. The involvement of international community, as SSG was saying here, is working alongside with people. But what we are seeing in South Sudan in some cases, in many areas, that it's almost like a sit-back position in which almost, in some aspects, the international community is doing almost everything. And then there is little that we are seeing, that we are doing for ourselves. And this brings me to the issue of dependency. So how do we look at this multilateralism in the future of sustained self-reliability? The question, for how long are we going to depend on the international community in many aspects? So the line is open for you. Let me start with Honorable Betty.
Thank you so much for that question. Well, it looks like we are really over-dependent on the international community or those benefactors who are helping us in doing so many things. Mm. One is that in order for us to work properly with our partners, with whoever supports us in whatever we do, there is always an opportunity to grab that little assistance that is given to you and utilize it properly, so that whoever has given you that coin will rest assured that you are doing something. But the moment that you receive things and you are not accountable, you don't report what actions, or you relax and you don't do anything at all, then there will be a lot of question marks about you as a person, you as institutions, you as a country, and all what you have. And we have been working so much hand in hand with the UN agencies in trying to carry out peace building activities to the communities at all levels. And one of the tenets of that work is that you have to deliver what you have promised you're going to do. in order for you to get the next grant. But it does not stop us also from fundraise. We should also fundraise in our own ways, whether it is through community contribution or other contributions from elsewhere, so that we are not totally dependent on these benevolent bodies. Because community contribution has become so mega because we always overlook. We say these are poor. We label everybody as poor. If I have 1,000 heads of cattle,
you're not poor.
Am I poor?
You're not.
That's not true. Because it's us to educate our people that they are not poor.
They have something. Yeah.
And that resource has to be used. It has to be put into proper use. Mm-hmm. Because you can contribute a bull, you can contribute a goat, you can contribute anything, whether you are agriculturalist
or some of your crops. Yeah.
Some of your crops.
Yeah.
You contribute it and it will
help. Or even labor. Yeah.
It will help the activity your people are trying to do. But we have created a situation in the minds of our people that they are poor. They are vulnerable. They cannot do this. They cannot do that. World Food Program has to bring food. You see?
Yeah.
UNHCR has to be protecting refugees, who has to be protecting IDPs and all this and that. When we integrate these IDPs into our various communities where they don't feel threatened, I think we'd be able to take care of them.
Mm-hmm.
We should not, you know, tie our hands that we are completely vulnerable and we cannot do anything. Because all in all, the best is community contribution because of ownership.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you do everything for them, the ownership is not there.
Yeah.
So when all these bodies go away, you collapse.
Yeah.
You'll not be able to do anything.
And we have to foresee that.
Yeah.
You see, we have to foresee that this thing is temporary. Nothing
yes.
is going to last for.
Yes.
And even we have something called donor fatigue.
Yes.
And it's soon coming. Let me go quickly to Honorable Pietris in the same line.
I think as a country, what is really facing us most is the element of peace. Once there is peace in the country, I am sure there will be nobody who is going to be dependent, and every community will be very independent, because people will be access to all the services and they will be able to practice agriculture. The roads are open, people will be able to access markets and sell their goods. And when there is development, definitely everyone becomes empowered. So I think the syndromes of dependence is only through peace that everybody in the community or in the country can be empowered.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for that. And also let me go quickly to the young people. Young people have been like, there was really big buzz on the social media when the young people were described as dependent, lazy, uncreative and all this. So
yes.
what is your comment on this issue of being very dependent?
Yes, indeed. There's been a lot of talk on social media, and the youth have not been really happy with the fact that they have been called lazy. And you can feel from that outcry of the way they felt like, this is not right. Why would they call us such?
Yeah.
So to talk about dependency, I think we have seen all different international organizations, offering help. And I think it is just a human nature. Where you get something for free, you'll always go there to get it, and you will never think of how to make that. For the issue of self-reliant, I think it is better to build people who can make their own food, who can create their own jobs, instead of offering something. I think it is better to train someone to be able to get that by themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this is one of the issues that most people face in the States, is the fact that they will never stand on their own. Even just a small farming that you can be able to do, you cannot do it because you feel like, why should I work, yet I will get something for free at the end of this month or at this time. So I think I really want to speak to the international organization to put in more efforts into training people to be able to be self-reliant. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that might have provoked a reaction from SRSG David Shearer.
No, look, like, to be honest with you, I completely agree with everything that's been said. Yeah. No disagreements whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
I think certainly there are people at the moment, certainly with no peace, there are people at the moment who are vulnerable and need support. But there's a fine line between providing support for people extending that support to such a degree that people become dependent on it. And I remember fairly recently a nutritionist who had been doing some studies up in Awheel, I think it was, in that area of the country, who had gone around and talked to people about whether they were growing crops there, and they said, well, we used to grow crops, but now we just wait for WFP. I thought, isn't this, what are we doing here? This is terrible. So I do think there's a real issue here that is in part, as I think it was a Beatrice who mentioned it, it's partly human nature, but on the other hand, it's also we have to be aware of it as agencies as well, that we don't step in too much. The other thing about it is that if we do step in too much, it means that the government itself or the authorities, we take the responsibility away from them. So in a way, the money goes to the wrong areas instead of going to the areas that are in need, because the international community is stepping into those areas. So there's a whole bunch of different, very complicated issues around this, but I'd just like to say I completely agree with what's been said, and it's over to us as the UN and NGOs, etc., to take a really good, hard look at ourselves and see if we're doing more harm than good in many cases.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, it's through dialogue and understanding of what really matters in a certain time, in a certain place. And listeners, Radio Mirai, this is me, Gabriel Shadar, with the discussion hour on a nationwide program. And with me online is the special representative of the Secretary General of the United Nations in South Sudan, that is David Shearer, who is the head of the mission and also head of the all United Nations agencies in South Sudan. And with me also in the studio is head of the South Sudan Peace Commission and the commissioner in the South Sudan Peace Commission, Honorable Betty Oboy, and also the representative of the South Sudan Peace Building Director General for Peace Resolution and Social Cohesion, Honorable Beatrice Angie George. And also with me in the studio is Ms. Fernanda Paul Machoy, Deputy Chair of the South Sudan Youth Union. And we will have more interaction with the guests as we continue with the program.
Nationwide, your daily current affairs program on Radio Mirai.
Yes, now I have asked a question about the youth earlier, but as we have three women here in the studio, a lot of discussion has been going on about the 35% or represented, not representative, and also. So I want to move us to widen the scope a little bit, because the 35% seems to have been misunderstood as just a matter of representation and giving something to women, while we see that women actually have a lot of stakes in the community, in the family. They are bearing the brunt of a lot of things. A lot of violence have been meted out on women and girls who are being forced to marry and all that kind of things. Don't you think that this is being taken out as something that can be just manipulated, and it's not actually a real recognition of women and the importance of role of women? It's not just about percentage, Honorable Betty.
Thank you so much for that question. It's a very wonderful question, and that is a question that has been going on in the minds of so many women, because the 35% or previously 25% is not really taking into consideration the interests of the women, but it's a matter of seeing women there.
So having women there, leaving out the majority of the women who have their own issues, is a problem that has to be revisited. Two, these women that are representing the women, how close are they to their fellow women? What role would they play to empower their fellow women to come up and take responsibilities and know that this is where I'm supposed to work as a woman, or this is what I'm expected to do as a woman? Because as we talk, you bring women together and talk about the former 25%, which was not really achieved. We go for another 35%, which is bringing in challenges now, as we can see even in the formation of the state's government. The 35% is nowhere to be seen. It has been swallowed. Mm. So those women who have already been given power into their hands, are they asking these questions? Whether they are at the Council of Ministers meeting or whether there are any parties, are they asking why the 35% has not been given to the women in governorship? It's not just a matter of being given a position and you just go and sit there and forget about everything. You are there as an eye of the women. So anything that comes up about women, you are supposed to be the first defense. You are supposed to be the one to go to the women and say, women, this is what is happening. What do you think we should do so that we can lead you to get whatever you want? Mm-hmm. But as I see, it's not happening.
Yeah, it's a lot of aspects being missed out when we just talk about numbers. It's not just numbers. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's not supposed to be numbers.
Yeah. Let me have the opinion also of Honorable Beatrice on this.
Well, yeah, in South Sudan, we really have highly educated women and women leaders in South Sudan. The question is, at what level are they being presented as leaders, you know? We have at the national level, the state level, and down to the county and to the payam. Mm. What we mean by the effective leadership of women, women involvement in leadership, we want them to appear at the management level, at the top, you know, not only down at the medium or at the grassroots that we need to see women actively participating. We want them to be at the top with all, you know, at all the levels that women, that leadership is being laid down. Mm. So we want to see women as presidents, we want to see women as vice presidents, we want to see women as ministers, we want to see women as directors, you know, not only as you know, as a deputies at the level of...
We don't see women on the secretaries either.
No, we don't want to see women as tea makers, as messengers. We want to see women as ministers as well.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for this. Let me check the perspective also of the young lady, Fernanda Paul-Mashoi.
Yes, indeed, the women presentation has really been weak, and I think it is getting weaker compared to the years that have gone, since I think it was more stronger when they said 25%. I felt women were presented more than the 35% right now. And I think it is up to we, the women, to really own up the 35%. It is not just a matter of being flattered if they tell us it is 35% and you will all live happy and think we are presented. But we need to critically think, how best is this? Mm. And also we need to empower the women in the grassroots of how they can own up to leadership right there. So I think women need collective work. Maybe they can come up with the social forums that where they meet and discuss ideas and see where they're not presented, and that they can be the voice for the rest.
Yeah. And of course, the situation of women is not going to change unless also men start to think differently, of course, and join hands with progressive women, progressive men join hands with progressive women, and all of them, they move on together. I'm coming to the end of the, last minutes of the discussion today. Of course, we are here discussing our topic is the future we want, the UN we need. Building peace, durable peace together in South Sudan. And this is on the sidelines of the marking of the 75th anniversary of the United Nations. SRSG David Shearer, you have been here for 4 years, and unfortunately part of it was in conflict in an otherwise very promising country in many aspects. And that brings me to the question of the challenges you have been facing and what you can be proud of as we are 2 years into implementation of the peace agreement.
Well, I mean, I think that's the big one. I came here at the beginning of 2017. It wasn't long after the July 2016 violence. And violence between political parties continued right through 2017 till we got to the end of it, and there was a ceasefire agreed to. And then the following year there was a peace agreement signed. And this year, at the beginning of this year, we have a transitional government. Now, when I came, I thought the idea or the possibility of a transitional government and a ceasefire and was a very, very remote possibility, and yet we have that now. So I think there's a lot that we can be really proud of. And we were just one player in a whole group of people, South Sudanese mainly, but also, the region and other places, other people as well, that helped to contribute to that. And that's something that I'm really, really pleased about over that period. Unfortunately, this year, what we're seeing is that while that political framework has stayed in place, what we're seeing is fracturing at a local level happening in a way we hadn't seen before, and I'm beginning to get quite worried about that, and I'm hoping that we can arrest that, and a lot of that is because of, as we mentioned before, lack of resources and flooding and things like that have created lots of tensions in different places that weren't there before. But from my point of view, some of the work, that peace agreement, some of the work that we've done on the ground, is helped to contribute to people living more peacefully. I just remember a couple of things. One is when that peace agreement was signed, there were about 130 or 140 almost spontaneous or organized meetings between IO and the government. We participated and organized about a third of them, and I was up in Benchu on Thursday, last Thursday, and there in Benchu, the IO police and the government police are patrolling together. They're working together. They've got the same uniforms. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things that are going on around the country that that are really, really positive, that we need to be really thankful for. But we just have to be really on the alert to make sure that some of these other issues that are starting to get more traction doesn't happen. But we've come a long way in that period of time. But unfortunately, as we often say, there's still a long way to go.
You have to be cautious always. Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Thanks, SRSG, for that. I'm left with 3 minutes, and I'll give the guests in the studio each one a minute to give the best of your messages, if you can, in 1 minute. Honourable Betty from the Peace Commission.
Thank you so much. My message to the South Sudanese people is that they should continue struggling together to achieve sustainable peace. They should work in harmony, leave alone these other political issues. We should look at them at a different angle, because it's not all politics that brings us peace. It's we as human beings, we as the citizens, who can bring about the peace. It's us to support our leaders so that they can see that we are really very serious about peace, and without peace we cannot do anything. So the people of South Sudan, peace is yours. Peace is not going to come from anywhere. It's you to work for your own peace so that you will be able to get sustainable peace in this country.
Thanks. Let me go to Honorable Petrus.
Well, thank you very much. My message to our South Sudanese, to the community out there, is let's encourage dialogue to resolve our differences, to settle our problems, and let's encourage the use of courts to settle our conflicts, and we leave the use of guns. We should encourage community conflict resolutions through dialogue, and encourage issues which are very difficult to be settled by court.
Thank you very much, and Ms. Fernanda Paul Mashai.
Yes, I'm so thankful to the United Nations for standing with us to provide security, welfare to the people, and each and every other important thing that they have done. We are very grateful for that. We also, as a youth member, I really call upon the United Nations and other agencies to support the youth and look into how they can implement them in the decision-making, because as a youth body, I think we haven't seen much support from the United Nations when it comes to how they can help the youth of South Sudan. So we also need to see if they can establish a body that can look into the activities that other agencies are doing to help the youth of this country, because we don't see results of anything that is being done. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. And your cautious wishes, SRSG?
Look, I think I really hope that as we're going forward, we won't be here in 75 years' time and still discussing the same issues. We won't be. I won't be. What I would like to say is with people like that, those that I've just heard on this panel, and their dedication and their ability to mobilise people in South Sudan and to move things forward, I've got a lot of optimism. I think this country has got enormous potential, and not everybody says that, but I really do think that. And but it's a young country, and it hasn't had the experience of governing itself before, and we need to. It needs to be, in a sense, moving in the right direction and guided by others to be able to fulfil its real potential. So, I just want to say thank you very much for having this this discussion and on the anniversary of the UN's birthday.
Thank you very much, and that is the end of today's nationwide discussion. Thank you very much, and see you soon with more peace around the country for all. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And that is all from me, Gabriel Shadar, on Nationwide.
Nationwide, your daily current affairs program on Radio Mirai.
101 FM. About the nation, across the nation. Radio Mirai.
Yeah.